The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
For another episode of Blacks in Business Radio. I am one of your hosts, Cece Harry, and I'm joined by Brother Robert 11X. How are you doing, Robert?
Doing wonderful. And yourself, Cece?
I'm great. I'm so thankful today. You know, our show is going to be, the first part is pre-recorded, and that's fine. That's great, because as long as we can bring the content to our listening audience, I don't care how we get it to them. So this part is going to be pre-recorded. Our first half, we're going to be dealing with Brother Raheem Shabazz, and he is the creator of Elementary Genocide 1, 2, and 3. Our second half of the show is going to be Dr. Deborah Tillman, who is America's Super Nanny. I am so excited to have her on the show because she is just everything to me as far as mentorship and how we should be dealing with our children. So, our first guest today, Brother Raheem, how are you doing today?
Peace and black power, sister. I am doing excellent, and I'm just glad to be here to speak to our people.
Excellent. So, I came in contact with you sometime last year. I don't want to call it a fluke because I don't think that there are any accidents, but I got to meet you face-to-face in Atlanta this past 2017, at the Black Power Awards, and I was just blown away how many black filmmakers were actually there. We had a couple black filmmakers there, but I got to meet you up close and personal and purchase my documentaries right there with you. So why don't you tell our listening audience about yourself and how you actually got started in filmmaking and the series ever so popular Elementary Genocide 1, 2, and 3.
Okay, to give a little background on who I am, my name is Raheem Shabazz, and I'm from Harlem. I come from the unruly streets of Harlem, and like many of my peers, I have found myself on the wrong side of the law at a very young age, and this led to me being incarcerated. And when I was incarcerated, I didn't even have a GED. Within 30 days, I wound up getting my GED. Eventually, I went on to be sentenced to a six-year prison sentence. And while incarcerated, I enrolled in college, and I graduated 8 days before I was released, and I graduated in the top 5% of my class, and I have a degree in human service. But while I was in college, I did a lot of studying and research, and everybody always told me I was a prolific writer. But one of the studies that I did was I wanted to see how incarceration was affecting us and what was the overall cause of it. And while I was doing this research, I found out that 85% of the prisoners that go to New York State prison come from 7 neighborhoods in New York City. And then I began to study those 7 neighborhoods, and I seen, you know, the reading scores, the poverty, the disparity in health issues, and I began to put all of this together. But it didn't immediately dawn on me that I would start doing film, because like I said, I was a writer. So I was writing for several different urban-driven publications, from Source, 5XXL, you name it. Let me back up. As me being a writer, I started writing film scripts, and I wrote a movie and wound up producing it. It was a short film, and me winning that award, I was apprenticed for 3 days on Tyler Perry's movie set. I wound up talking my way into a job there, and I worked on 4 films with them. And so I wanted to go on and do something else, and I wanted to do something that was near and dear to my heart. And that's when the concept of the School to Prison Pipeline came up. And I put out my first film, which is called Elementary Genocide, the School to Prison Pipeline. And for those that don't know, what this film does is it explores the way the government and the school system look at the rates of the reading scores of 3rd and 4th graders, and they're able to determine how many prisons they're going to build in the next 10 to 15 years. And what they do is they sell these prisons on the stock market, because if you're not reading on grade level, there's a 75% chance that you're going to end up in prison. And one of these prisons is called CCA, which is Correction Corporation of America. And if you go to their website, you can see how their stock has risen since Trump has been in office. And their motto on their website is, if we build it, they will come. So I did that movie, and while I was touring the country promoting it, I began to talk to the individuals that attended my speaking engagement. And one of the things they said was, Raheem, you focus on black youth, particularly African-American youth, you know, males. What about the females? So I began to do more study, and that's when I found out that there's an 800% increase in the last 30 years in incarceration of women. So I went back and I shot the second documentary, and this one I wanted to go back to the landmark ruling of Brown versus Board of Education. And I wanted to ask the proverbial question, has it caused more harm than good? And as we know, it caused more harm, because during that time we was taught by our own people that came from our culture, came from our background, and that knew us, as opposed to white settlers now teaching our children. So 82,000 teachers lost their job, and they integrated the students, but they didn't integrate the teachers. So that was the second one, which is called Board of Education versus Board of Incarceration. And to round out the series, we did another documentary, which is called Academic Holocaust. And in this documentary, we wanted to show that the killing of the black unarmed youth in the streets is no different than the assassination of your mind, the assassination of your critical thinking that's being done in the public education system. Because today's youth, they have a right to remain a student. They should have a right to remain a student instead of being told they have a right to remain silent. So that is the conclusion of the documentary series, and it has been well received all around the world.
Yeah, and I can definitely see that. And let me just tell you, we at Blacks in Business appreciate you for educating our youth and getting the word, well, educating our parents, I should say, and getting the word out, letting them know what's going on, because I have firsthand information about the school system, because, of course, I have children. And as you see your children being set up to fail, you just really don't at the time understand that it is a system that is going forth to suppress them, to set them up to be in prison, because you see the tag of special education, And you see, most importantly, the children not being taught how they learn. You know, there are different modalities in how the children actually learn, and they're not being taught that way. You know, a lot of our children are kinesthetic, tactile, you know. Some of our children are visual. Some of our children learn through, you know, auditory means. And like myself, I learn through all ways, you know. It's not just one way that I learn. But for children to have to just sit down, be still, and be quiet, that is definitely setting them up for failure. Setting them up to work a job and sit behind a desk, because that's what you do when you're at a job. You sit behind a desk and you just do nothing. You're a robot. So it's setting them up in several different ways, and all these ways are to fail.
Absolutely, absolutely. And if you really look at it, like when I was doing my study, the first thing that I realized is that young men such as myself, you know, coming from the community that I came from, we was learning how to serve a sentence before we was learning how to write one. Because while I was in there, after I got my GED for several years, I taught what is known as adult basic education. And me being 24 years old, I was teaching grown men, 35 and 40 and 45 years old, how to read. I'm talking about basic reading on third and fourth grade level. So it was a real, you know, disheartening situation for a lot of those brothers in there, you know, because education is the great equalizer. And I tell that people all the time, education is paramount to our survival. And if you go back to the 1800s and you look at an individual like Carter G. Woodson, who was born the son of a slave and worked in the coal mines of West Virginia, at the age of 20, he entered high school and finished in 2 years. After getting his master's degree, he completed the coursework for a PhD at Harvard in 1 year. How was he able to do that? Because he understood that education was a great equalizer. Then if we go back to 1875, we have Mary Bethune, and she worked in the cotton fields of South Carolina and was one of 17 children born to a former slave. She was able to be the only child to attend school because her parents knew that out of all the children, one of them had to make it, and education was the great equalizer. So she went on to excel extremely fast, and she eventually opened up her own school and hospital for black people. And one thing about having an education, there's two types of education. There's one where you get educated in an Ivy League school, you come out and become a part of the social order, and then you work 9 to 5 as everybody else. Then there's that Afrocentric education that, and no matter what you do, no matter what field that you take, that your education is going to be utilized not only to provide you with a means of earning income, but it's going to help you to move your race and your people forward. That's the education that Carter G. Woodson and Mary Bethune had in the 1800s. So if they was able to do that then, with no internet, no Google, and limited resources, and imagine what we can do in 2018 if we put our minds to it. So this is the message that I go around the country and I speak, and I try to inspire our youth as well as our parents, because we are at a disadvantage. Because by the time an individual, whether they are male or female, they come into kindergarten, if you're poor, you read to about 25 hours. You read to about 25 hours. Other kids, 1,700 hours. That's an average of 1 hour a day. So we already starting at a disadvantage. And not only that, the vocabulary, the words that you hear and the words that you're able to memorize before you enter preschool, we are 50% less than our Caucasian counterparts. So a lot of times, you know, we could blame it on the school system, but sometimes it's the parents, you know, because you're already coming in a situation where they don't want you there, they don't like you, and then the kids are not already prepared, so it's just like a double disadvantage for them. So if we're going to send our kids to these schools, we have to have them equipped. And for those that are in position where they don't have to send their children to these schools, we have to start homeschooling them. Because Malcolm X said, we are the only race of people to allow our open enemy to educate our kids. And that should
right,
be done.
Right, right. This is absolutely true. And that equipping of the child has to start very early, whether they are homeschooled or schooled in the public school system. We have to equip them to go out into this world. Now, I have, again, firsthand information because I did some student teaching in Washington State at an elementary school, and it was actually disheartening to me to go into a classroom and see the teacher immediately oppressing black children. I mean, immediately. Mm-hmm. And I was blown away. So in my attempt to correct her, I went to the principal who was black. And that was as equally horrific because the teacher, the principal said to me that the black people are not smart enough to become teachers, and that is why there are no black teachers in this school. She said that she tried to encourage, and she began talking to me in like broken English. I don't know why she resorted to that. She said the black teachers just are not smart enough. They can't pass the test. She tried to encourage them to pass the test, and they just can't do it. So now we have to deal with white teachers. And I was just blown away. I mean, because there's so many dynamics behind this thought, you know, that she was trying to push forth. And I mean, in Washington State, of course, I could see where she was trying to aspire to be something that made her leave her people behind. You know, I'm blown away at how the school system works as opposed to how when I was growing up. Now, I see some mm-hmm. things today that I did not see growing up. I know that in Anchorage, Alaska, at Fairview Elementary School, my black teachers and my black principal cared about educating us. You know, I'm able to look at that school system and have a great perspective and say that they were interested in educating us. Now, I look at what's going on today, and it's just mm-hmm. not the same situation, and I'm just totally disgusted by it. And that's why we have to make sure that we, at the level that we're at, we have to begin educating our people in what is going on in the public school system, you know, because parents are indoctrinated in thinking that when they send their children to these schools, that the children are getting the best education versus indoctrination. They're getting the best education possible, and that the teacher is always right. And when they get these reports of the child acting up, it is the child and not the teacher. And that's due to the parents really not being involved and seeing what is going on in the school. Robert, what do you have to say?
Yeah, we just recently visited a local school here in St. Louis, and, you know, these teachers are not even aware of their own behavior because the parents of the children are not involved. And I was just walking down the hall listening to the teachers talk to this. Well, they weren't really talking to the students. They were yelling at the students to get in line. You can see you can hear the frustration in the teacher's voice. And I stopped and looked at this teacher addressing this young black child, but the look on the teacher's face was as if she was disgusted at this child. And then when she saw me look at her and realized that I actually saw her facial expressions, then she started more so toning it down and then catering towards me and my grandson. Sir, how can I help you? What do you need? But no, I just saw how you really had this look of disgust in your face. And these were all Caucasian students, teachers dealing with majority black students. And I know the parents are not involved as much as they should be. I went to one of these meetings that they had. It's like a dads and donuts type of meeting. And you know, they told me, I asked the question, how many students go to the school. It was like 360 students, so half of that should be black male parents, you know. But at the meeting, it was like maybe 35 dads, and when I saw the black fathers, it was such a sad representation. Even though it was good that they were there, but you can easily tell that these men had issues. Majority of them had some type of mental issue. One man abruptly got up after reading the paper and said, "This is some BS, and I'm not standing here for this." And we all were looking dumbfounded, like, what happened to him? But my point is, the state of the black father or the black man that was there that was representing these children, brother, was just so sad to see us in this state of mind. So we're there, but we're not really conscious or knowing what to do in being involved in the educating of our children. Most of us don't even know what legally or what should be done and what shouldn't be done as it pertains to child and teacher relationship. So, I mean, it's just so many dynamics that go into this thing. And when you in these environments, you can easily see why the pipeline, the penitentiary, why penitentiaries, as you say, on the stock market are bringing in, raking in the cash, because it's clearly evident and obvious to see that, you know, we at home, as you said too, to start at home, we don't either, one, have the time to address the children's need, two, we're just not interested. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah, we say that's the school's job. You think it's the school's job to just totally, as a whole, educate your child when, you know, in fact, in the beginning we talked, you know, we have to equip them for these situations. I mean, preferably.
Absolutely.
If they are not in this public school system, that's great. But a deficit in our community is we feel that we are not equipped to educate our own children because of lack of education ourselves, when in fact that's not true. You are perfectly able to learn right alongside your child as you're teaching your child. You're your child's first teacher. And that mindset that you can't educate your own child is false. You absolutely can. And we promote homeschool here. And we promote parents getting the understanding that they should be teaching their own children. And for whatever reasons, you know, people not being entrepreneurs, people having to work a job, people just really feeling that they're at a disadvantage, they have not been able to put themselves in position to educate their children. And that's why I think that we have to really start educating people as parents before they even become parents. I know I'm talking to my own son. He just got married. He's 26. That you must, before you have children, set it up in your mind that you have to be their first teacher. You have to teach them at home. You cannot send them out into these institutions and expect them to be able to learn from somebody other than themselves. You cannot expect them to learn from somebody that is looking to put them in prison. That is the system. So you have to educate people before they even have children. I mean, I think that will be the greatest advantage if we start doing that by film screenings of elementary genocide 1, 2, and 3, 7 a.m., and just all other films that we just, you know, help our people become educated about what is going on in this world and helping them to know that they are greater than what their oppressor has taught them. I mean, that's the biggest thing, because we think that, just like doctors, we think that the school teachers are God, the doctors are God, you know, the government is God. And that's just not true. We have to know that we possess the appropriate information to educate our own people.
You know, the thing, and that's true, and the thing that I'm looking at and hearing, when you talk about getting into the head of the family, the mind of the head of the family, or the mind of the person that's heading the family. How do you do that? I mean, because if we're not in the trenches, in the hood, if we're not there, where do we intervene into these people's life, into our people's life, to where actually implant the seed in their head? I mean, a lot of the young people don't even go to church. A lot of the young, where do we meet them at to even put that seed in their head?
You have to meet them where they at. You know, if it's in the streets, then, you know, we have to bring the gospel of what education is to them in the streets. But it needs to start at home. That's the first and most critical place, because we're talking about young kids. I'm talking about coming straight out of the womb. You need to be reading to them. You need to be molding and shaping them for the man or the woman that they're going to become from the time of conception, during the informative years. Because you spoke about the situation with white school teacher, and what a lot of people don't know is that the public education is being taught by predominantly white women. 75% of all teachers are white females. Out of that 75%, 25% is married to law enforcement officers. So therefore, you have the white female that's there to mentally miseducate you. Then you have the white male that's there to physically lock you up and incarcerate you. And both of them work hand in hand. And when I tell people this, they be like, man, come on, Rod, this can't be true. And yeah, people wouldn't believe that syphilis was true. People wouldn't believe that the government would give the Indians blankets with smallpox. You know, and everything that's being done to us in this day, in this time, people can't believe that there's a systematic plan to exterminate, to castrate, to emasculate the black man, woman, and child. And I just don't understand it, you know. And it is clear as day, you know, that we have to come together. And we have a responsibility, because responsibility only means respond to your ability. And we have a responsibility to fight back for the next generation, because it was somebody that fought for us, you know. And I know myself, witnessing it firsthand, that in America, first you're designated a bad child by the school, a person of interest by the police, and a gangster by society. Whether you affiliated just by being a melanated individual, you're suspect. So we got to get it together as a people. And nothing that I'm saying or that I'm telling anybody can't be researched. You can cross-reference everything I said. Let Google be your best friend and find out what is going on. You know, it didn't take me long to find out and see the sinister plan that is at hand. And I'm going to say this, and I'm going to let y'all speak. What's really ironic about all of this is that I had read Kwanzaa Kanjufu's book, The Conspiracy to Destroy the Black Child, it's 1 and 2. I think that might have been 1986. I read the book. I didn't really understand it at that time. I didn't understand it how I would understand it today. But everything he talked about in that book is happening now, and it was happening back then. When he talked about how, you know, the majority of special education is being labeled special ed, is on black youth, and why is being done? Because they can no longer segregate the schools, but they put them in these classes that's just going to be predominantly black. The over-medication of our kids and the prescription of all these drugs and, you know, ADHD and all that. He breaks that all down. And if you look at Dr. Amos Wilson, he has a book called Awakening the Black Genius and Child, or something to that effect. I'm paraphrasing it. But all of these books was written years and years ago, and they was telling us what the problem was, and they was giving us concrete solutions to the problem. So a lot of times, all we have to do is go back and read and listen to our great grandmaster teachers. And the solution is right there. And this is something that we don't have to ask people permission to do. You know, this is something that we can do for ourselves. We can make a 7-year plan where we say, you know what, all the black colleges make an initiative that if people enroll in the teacher program, that their tuition will be waived if they work in the school system for, let's say, 4 years in a displaced community. You know, where you have an influx of black teachers coming into the school system, because right now you have an organization that's called Teachers of America, and they're literally white females that go through 6 weeks of training that come into these communities, and it's just like the missionaries that came into Africa, and they told them, close your eyes and pray, and when they opened their eyes, you know, they had the Bible in their hand, and the missionaries had the land. So we have to be careful of people that want to come in and be teachers in our own community when they don't live in the community, number one, and then they send their daughters and their sons to these, you know, private schools. If public school is so good and you feel that children are afforded equal education, then you have to ask them the question, why your kids are not in this school. And then another thing for black parents, And I go through this a lot. I get phone calls, Raheem, what should I do? This is what's happening with my son. Well, what school do your son go to? Robert E. Lee Elementary School. I would never say just the name alone, Robert E.
Right.
Lee. You know, my kids is not going to that school, you know?
Right.
And then it's always a white teacher that's standing up there and that's teaching about adverbs and pronouns and how magnificent the queen language is, and we're talking about the same queen that commissioned Columbus to come over here and slaughter the Indians. So we got to deal with that. We got to deal with the school, just the name of it. Everything, you have to look at it for what it is and not what it presents itself to be. You're never supposed to send your kids to a school like that. And then another thing with black parents, what we got to understand is that a lot of parents that are in position, they like to send their kids to private schools or send them to these schools. You know, they move to the suburbs so they can have their children in what they deem the best schools. Let me tell you something. 2 + 2 = 4 in Harlem, and 2 + 2 = 4 in Scarsdale.
Mm-hmm.
Sending them out there, and they're the only black child in that class. The psychological effect and the damage that's going to have on them in 30 years down the line is something that's going to be unreversible.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot
mm-hmm.
of parents, they don't know how to deal with that when it's heaped upon them years down the road later. They are so disconnected from their blackness that they despise them and got more love for the open enemy. And those are the kids and the individuals that become co-conspirators and aiding and abetting our open enemy, oppressing our own kids. Because it ain't just the white people. You got black individuals, how you talked about that principle, that are handkerchief head Negroes that don't have our best interests at heart. And rather, you know, let me stop right there because I can keep going on.
Oh no. You at home right here, you can talk about all those things. There is no we will not censor you.
I know that, but sometimes it's good to really just speak the truth and don't get too radical with it, because then that's the only thing they hear. Oh, Raheem, you got a divisive message, and everything else I said goes out of the window. So I don't want to do that. You know, I want y'all to just give you the truth, you know. Because our
right.
people, man, they talk about being divisive. You're supposed to be divisive. You know,
right.
Elijah Muhammad said that it's 3 things that the open enemy is not going to teach you. And that's the science of warfare, education, and mating. You know, but one thing that he also taught is that separation is better than prayer. You know what I mean? Sometimes, man, you have to separate from individuals that don't do you no good. You know,
right.
And it's just like if you're in a relationship for females, if you're in an abusive relationship, you know you got to leave that relationship. You know, but for whatever reason, some choose to stay and think things will get better. And 9 times out of 10, it doesn't get better. And it's the same thing. We are in an abusive relationship. When are we going to leave? Many of
right.
us, including myself, we left. And we trying to come back like Harriet Tubman and save everybody else.
Right. And we have to know we can't save everybody. But I believe that, you know, it's kind of like, you know, lawyers have a term called mudslinging. I'm going to throw the truth out as many times as possible, and wherever it will stick with at least one person, I'm happy to do that. You know, I'm happy to rescue some children that did not come from my body. If that means start a Saturday school, which is what we had when I was growing up, I'm telling you, I know that my teachers loved us, and that was a different time. We had Saturday school. There was black teachers that came into the elementary school and taught us on Saturday because they recognized the deficit in the school system for us. And we have to do that, like places like in St. Louis, Missouri. Here in St. Louis, you can call yourself a school. You don't have to have any certification, nothing. You can just call yourself a school. Not many people know that. And so if people knew that, I think that they would be able to act in such a manner that we would be able to pull our children in and help them. Me personally, I know it needs to be done, so whatever I can do on my level, I want to do it, even if that means, you know, my own family members. You know, what little people are in my family that I can help, that I can, you know, I can teach, even if they are in this school system. What is it that I can do to equip them for being in that environment? Or can I pull them out completely? Can I teach them myself? You know, am I? And that's why being an entrepreneur is important, because if you're an entrepreneur, you can stop the clock and you can do what you need to do to make it happen for our people. And that's what we promote on, you know, on this network, this station, Blacks in Business Radio, every Thursday at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. We want to equip our people to come out of slavery, to come out of slavery mindsets. And that's why we have important guests like you, Brother Raheem, to help us do that. Now, did you have any last comments that you wanted to make for our listeners? We also want to let them know how they can reach out to you through social media or email, or even purchase copies of your documentary.
Indeed. And my last closing was, I want everybody to go online, because you don't need to go buy it. Don't give her no money. But go online and look up this quote. It's from Hillary Clinton. It's in her book, It Takes a Village, right? First of all, the concept and the proverb, It Takes a Village, is an African proverb. So she took that from us. That's number one. But you go and you look up this quote, and this is her quote. Since we started talking about in the beginning that it's the parents' responsibility and the parents are the first teachers, we know that. That's a given. We all can agree on that. Even people that don't agree with me can agree that parents are the first teachers. In this book, he says, I believe the primary role of the state is to teach, train, and raise children. Parents have a secondary role. This is her quote in her book. Y'all go read it. And this is the same people that, you know, black folks was keeping for to be the next president. You know, so you have to read and understand. And then after you read that, go back and look up compulsory schooling and how it began and how it was implemented in every state. And then in Massachusetts, there was one small area called Cape Cod that resisted. And they went in there with government police force and militias, and they marched those kids to school under arm and made them get an education, and how education became mandatory for every child. That was to train them to be a part of the social order and to indoctrinate their minds. That's where education and the Eurocentric sense came from, and they make it mandatory for you to send your kids to school. And here it is, This lady is saying that you have a secondary role, that the government and the school job is to teach and train you and raise your children. Raise your children. Parents should raise their children. They have a secondary role. So I want to leave people with that. And if you're interested in viewing the documentary or purchasing the documentary, you can go to elementarygenocide.com. If you purchase all three, we have a discount where we'll take care of the shipping and handling, and we'll get that to you within 24 hours. Anybody interested in me and contacting me online, you can do so at Raheem Shabazz, and I'm on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, and probably every other social media network that you can find out there.
Perfect. Now, we also want to make sure that you have the opportunity to stream. I understand you have a podcast. You can stream your podcast through blacktalkradionetwork.com. We have an excellent platform, all black platform. CEO Scotty Reed would be happy to introduce your work on his network. So we'll have to get with you later and talk about that. Brother Robert, you got any last words?
Well, I want also to have the people that listen to this show consider my one question that I wanted to ask you, but I didn't get to ask you, was this here. Where do you see, can you see the outcome? What do you see the outcome being at this critical stage in time for us as a people, as it concerns with this subject matter? And I don't think you have time to answer the question, but I think we should at least think about that as a people. Where are we in this race at this critical time dealing with this matter of educating the education of our children?
I can answer that in less than 1 minute. I'm not going to be long-winded. I can say that victory is certain, and that we are a resilient people, and that if we survive slavery, then this is a walk in the park. We have to get together. And I think more than anything, that this generation is the warrior generation that is fearless and unapologetically African, and they're the ones that's going to make sure we get done what needs to be done. You know, you had the Moses generation that was saying, free us and take us to the promised land. But this generation is the Joshua generation. This is the one that's going to make it happen.
Absolutely. Well, we need to make sure that we are expounding upon that, continue to educate our people. There are some that are waiting for the message. So we definitely appreciate you, brother, for coming on our show. We hope to talk to you later about private screening and all those wonderful things that you can help us get going. Also, your apparel. I know you're doing a lot of things, so we look forward to connecting with you later. Feel free to listen to us at any time and connect with us at any time on any projects that you may have coming up. But we want to just thank you for coming on our show, and we don't want to take up all of your day.
All right. I appreciate you, sister. I appreciate you, brother. Peace and Black Power, family.
Peace. All right. Brother. Same back at
yes,
you.
Sir.
Have a great day.
Well, all right. We want to just thank everybody for joining us. This is Blackton Business Radio. That was our first guest. That was Brother Raheem, and he is the producer and creator of Elementary Genocide. I am one of your hosts, CeCe Harry, and I am again joined by my co-host, Brother Robert 11X. Robert. Oh, did I just mute you? Lord, have mercy. I think I did. Robert's there. Hold on, everybody. But yes, so let's see. Scotty, can you unmute him? Because I don't know what is going on. But we just listened to that interview with Brother Raheem, and I would hope that you could reach out to. Oh, hey, are you there?
Yes. Hey, CeCe, how's it going?
It's going good. For everybody listening, it sounds like we're doing an introduction, and that's because that was pre-recorded, and now we are live for the second hour. But yes, I mean, that was a lot of great information on our situation in the school system, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. Especially, I mean, I've recently been dealing with, you know, my grandson in school, and going to, and visiting the school and seeing the classroom ratio, which has been going on for years. This is why that prison to school to prison pipeline has been so effective, and the penitentiaries are so full, because when you go to those schools and see just how many students there are to one teacher, that's just crazy. And something that you really put me up on, CC, that I really never really knew about until, you know, us dialoguing, was is the different learning styles that each child has. And with that being known, if you got a classroom with 20 students and each one of them has a different learning style, there's just no way possible that the teacher can accommodate the needs of all those students. So, man, this interview with the brother was, for me, was just on time and very informative. And it really puts a 911 in my mind in terms of what needs to be done in my immediate situation, as well as what needs to be done as a whole as a people when it concerns educating our children. So great interview. Mm-hmm. Just
great. Well, we want to make sure that the people who are listening, if they would like to chime in, just press ** and that will unmute you, and you can definitely talk to us. You can ask questions, you can make comments, tell us your own personal situations if you like. If not, you know, we'll just keep dialoguing for a minute. The top of the hour, we will have a commercial break, and then we will have our second guest on, and her name is Dr. Deborah Tillman, and she is better known as America's Super Nanny. Dr. Tillman has found great success in her experience as an entrepreneur in television, as an author, a consultant, a wife, a mother, and successful multiple child care center owner. So I definitely want to make sure that if you have questions, that you reach out to our show. If you listen to this by podcast, you can still do that. Just contact us by email. We are blacks with an S in business at gmail.com. We are blacks with an S at gmail.com. And we will definitely get your questions over to Dr. Tillman. And we will also have information on how you can contact her later on when she chooses to share that with us. But, you know, what we like to do, huh?
I think you said we are blacks with an S at gmail.com. It's, we are blacks
in business.
Right.
Did I not say that? Oh, Lord. No, we are, run it back. We are blacks with an S in business at gmail.com. We are blacks with an S in business at gmail.com. Okay. Thank you for that correction, because they would have got a bounce back. That would not have gone through. Oh, goodness gracious. That's why two are better than one. That's what we always say. So, I mean, that's definitely true. But yes, and you all can listen to us here every Thursday at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Let's not leave out the West Coast, 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Alaska, I don't know. I think you're two hours before that. I don't know. I don't know all these time zones. But learn your time zone so you'll know how to listen to us. But also, let's see, what else was I going to say? I mean, I was listening to that interview and it was wonderful. I mean, I was able to do a whole bunch of things while listening to us on the radio. But I think another issue that we may have as parents, I mean, my eyes are wide open now. Another issue we may have is, you know, when we see us in the school, which, you know, a lot of times in these school systems, we will see us, just like I was speaking about the principal, we kind of get like lax, or we feel comfortable because we see people that look like us. But, you know, they have been indoctrinated And, you know, some teachers, I mean, not all teachers, but, you know, for the most part, I would say they've been indoctrinated by a system, you know, college. I'm not calling college bad, but this is just the reality in how to go into these schools and how they're going to educate or not educate these children. So it's kind of the same situation. So you cannot go into a school system and because you see people that look like us just kind of throw your hands up and be like, oh, well, I just trust them. No, your child's best interest is always at heart. I mean, we're growing entrepreneurs here. You can't grow entrepreneurs if their self-esteem is low or they're not being taught how they learn or they're not, you know, they're just not receiving what they deserve. It's their God-given right to learn, and you are their first teacher. So as a parent, I would tell you, too, you got to continue to educate yourself. Now, whether that mean you enroll in some little side note courses or sidebar courses or a community college, join a book club or whatever, you have to continue to educate yourself, because as you continue to educate yourself, you will freely educate your child. I mean, some of these barriers are up because we have, you know, we've had issues in school ourselves. Like, you know, people told us we were stupid, or we felt we were stupid because we couldn't pass these tests or whatever, you know. But you know, you can teach your child. Scotty has made a comment. It says, I don't care where your child goes to school. If you are not actively involved in your child's action, then you are not parenting. You just have custody of a child. Your child's education, he meant. Absolutely, Scotty. You are absolutely right. And oftentimes the child is going to school and the school is used as a babysitter because the parent has to go to work or the parent has to go to sleep or whatever. And it's just a babysitting situation. What I find crazy oftentimes is, you know, all these children on a school bus. I mean, and they're on a school bus, and of course they're either going to a daycare or they're opening the door to nobody being home. I mean, I understand the dynamic of the things that we're dealing with. I get that and I understand. But we have to do better, you know. I'm going to talk to Dr. Tillman about some of these things, you know, because we used to have a village. And I don't know what happened to the village. It's just like it burned down. It went away. I think it's because people went to work. I'm not sure what happened. But, I mean, we like to tie our subject matter together. And so today this is very, very good. We're doing the elementary genocide. Again, I would urge you all to get 1, 2, and 3. If you want to get it from me, feel free to contact me at wearblacks@gmail.com, because I am also selling them. And right now I have a sale going on where you can get all three for only $60, which is a great price. Of course, you need to pay shipping and handling because that's what you do. But if you go ahead and reach out to me, please feel free to, you know, request that I send that out to you, and I will do so. Also know, if you go to YouTube, or not YouTube, I'm sorry, if you Google the movies, if you Google them, Brother Shabazz, his information will pop up, and you can actually watch them right from his site. You can like pay right there and watch them from the site. So you have a few choices, but I would think that we would like to educate our people. So in educating our people, you probably have like some little movie screenings at your home. You know, if you got a sister and they're having trouble with their children or whatever, you know, just pop some popcorn and invite everybody over so you can be informed on what is going on in the school system. And there are so many cases where Black children are just not getting what they need. I mean, we see it all the time. Oh, I've lived it. And, you know, I can tell you, through the whole system of special education and being labeled with the IEP, the child, you know, I mean, you can use that stuff to your advantage. But for the most part, it's just not a good thing for the child to be labeled. You want your child to be strong-willed and excellent and do all the things that they came here to do, because God put them on this earth for a purpose, and it wasn't the purpose of being oppressed. So we definitely want to make sure that we get what we need. We see that our 8 o'clock hour guest is there. Greetings, Dr. Tillman. We will have you on after the commercial break. We appreciate you for joining us. We will get you in after the commercial break. Brother Robert?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, what else do you have to say about this elementary genocide? I mean, it's just so near and dear to my heart because my background is early childhood education, over 11 and a half years being a child care provider. I've seen so many things. And then being a mom of four, it's just been, it's been a ride. And now going through the stuff with you and your grandchildren, I mean, it's all fun. I love it. It's wonderful. But, you know, we get to sharpen each other because, like I said before, two are better than one, and iron sharpens iron. So we're still doing it. We are definitely doing it.
Well, it's definitely been a very informative journey this go round with me for as far as with the children. You know, I did it for so many years with my first three children, and now I'm doing it all over again. I got a, you know, 6-year-old son, a 6-year-old grandson, and a 4-year-old. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
She acts like she's 23, but she's 3.
Right, she sure does. And just experiencing it all over again. The difference is, you know, you've been a blessing because you really, when you don't have someone that really understands this system, this educational system, the whole system of child care, like myself, we mean well as parents, but when you don't understand the language, when you don't understand your rights as a parent, there are so many things that just fly right over your head. And you can mean well, but meaning well in this system is not good enough. You really have to know. And I'm saying that from a perspective. I'm sitting back and I watch CC how she handles the business dealing with these educators. And I'm just like, okay, get them. Because she gets them. I mean, she really has taught me that you really have to be informed as a parent dealing with educators. And a lot of us just are not informed. And when I was at that meeting, I'm sitting at the meeting looking at these fathers, and I'm saying to myself, I say, well, I know I'm a conscious man, and, you know, and I'm here for my children, but I know I don't know all that I need to know in order to go toe-to-toe with this system. And had it not been for me meeting yourself and seeing and hearing the way you handle these educators, that's what told me in my mind, wow, so many parents, even mothers, so many parents don't know what to do. And I guess I can almost imagine this is why the children get tagged, and they start putting them on prescription drugs, and the parents just agree with it because the parents don't even know how to parent the child. They don't know that each child has a different learning style. They don't know that. I didn't know that. You know, I didn't know that. So it's such a sad thing looking at it from a knowledge point of view. And then looking back, I said, I have to be very real and very transparent about my life, you know, and very real. And I'm looking in the mirror and I'm saying, man, you know, if you don't know, and I didn't know these things, but even though I love my children, how do you know what to do? How do you know if you don't have a teacher?
Yes, you know? Yes. Now we have to go to commercial. I mean, so many questions unanswered. But so little time. So we will go to break right now. You're listening to Blacks in Business Radio on Black Talk Radio Network, where we are here every Thursday at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Hi, the Black Talk Media Project would like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent Black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRCommunity.com today.
All right, everyone, you heard the commercial. Join BTR Community today. You can use that as an alternative to other social media platforms. Join a platform where your people matter, BTR Community. Okay, so everyone, thank you for joining us. If you have missed the first hour, feel free to listen by podcast. Go to Black Talk Radio Network and look us up, BIB Radio. The first hour, we were talking to Brother Raheem Shabazz, and we were interviewing him about his series called Elementary Genocide, and he has part 1, 2, and 3. Oh, I just really enjoyed that. Look forward to meeting with him again whenever we do go back to Atlanta. But in our second hour, we are going to speak with Dr. Deborah Tillman, who is known for so much more than just being America's super nanny, but that's where I first came in contact with knowing who she was on the program, where she's going into homes and helping people with their children. But she's an author, a mother, a public speaker, a mentor, a child care center owner, so much more. We definitely want to welcome Dr. Deborah Tillman to our show.
Thank you.
Dr. Tillman, are you there?
I'm here. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, well, thank you for coming on our show. We are so grateful that you blessed us with your presence today. Now, we're going to go ahead and get in with this interview here so we don't run out of time, because I got a zillion questions and I had some questions that came in later. I'm like, oh, Lord, I already sent the questions off.
But no worries.
Well, we know that the Bible says your gift will make room for you, and I commend you for being a person of faith. Would you attribute your belief in God to the success that you now enjoy in your profession?
Oh, my gosh. Most definitely. It started from the beginning. I mean, I've always been raised in a church, but, you know, more spiritual than religious. And so one of my favorite scriptures is Matthew 6:33. Which means, you know, which says, which says, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you. And I truly believe that. I mean, I was an accountant. You know my story. And I don't know if many of your viewers know it, but I was an accountant, thought I was, you know, happy in that job until I had my son. And absolutely ridiculous how many child care providers I went through. We went through 7 child care providers as well as centers in 3 months. And so he was basically being abused by all 7. Like, we'd go in one place and he'd be in a car seat. I'd drop him off at 8 o'clock in the morning, come back at 12:30 in the afternoon. He'd still be in the car seat with his coat on, sweating profusely. I mean, it was just a horror story after horror story. And my thing to God was really, you know, why me, why me? And I think for all of us, when things happen in our lives that we're not used to or kind of devastating, we say, why me? Why is this happening to me? And God was not answering me. And it wasn't until the 7th child care provider that I walked into a home. By this time, I'm crazy, you know, just basically devastated by the 6th that I had just had. And she was in the hallway talking to somebody, and I was like, where's my child? And I went straight to a back room. He was in a bassinet. He was 3 months old, and he had a bottle in his mouth, and the wall was holding up the bottle, and he was sucking air. And literally, I mean, I lost it. I tell people now when I go speak all over the country, I tell them, I said, I could either be in jail or talking to you. And thank God I chose, you know, to just, you know, walk away. And at that point, I had just really surrendered. I basically surrendered, just like fell on my knees and said, okay, God, this has happened 7 times. Forget the why me. What is it you want me to do in the world? What is it you want? And literally, I heard 7 still small words, and he said, I want you to do it better. And I quit my job the next day. I literally quit my job the next day and started as an in-home child care provider. My degree was in accounting. And so I eventually went back to school and got a master's degree in early childhood special education. But I started in my home in a little apartment, watching my son and his best friend. But God had given me that dream. He had given me that vision. So I knew that even though I started in this small beginning, that, you know, I saw the end, which was the child care center. So I literally set up my apartment like a child care center. I had no employees, but I developed a 27-page employee handbook. I had no parents except for that one child, and I developed, it was probably about 20 pages then, a parent handbook. And I literally just acted like I was running a school. And 10 months later, the building that we were in, apparently they had a child care center that went out of business after having been in business for 30 years. And the manager, who I had never met, called me on the phone, got my phone number out of the apartment complex that we were in, and said, listen, a child care center just went out of business. I heard that you have been doing such a brilliant job in the apartment that you're in. Do you want the school? That's how I got the first school.
Wow.
So it's been God every step of the way, him ordering my steps. And you know, the Bible says he's a light lamp unto our feet, a light unto our path. And I just truly believe that when we are obedient to our calling, that God will make a way. He'll make room for us. I tell everybody that all the time. The world won't move over for you just because you're smart, just because you're intelligent. However, when you exercise that gift that you have, not only will the world make room for you, but you'll get paid for it.
That is some inspiration right there. My goodness. Oh, wow. And you know what? I want to just break off from the standard questions that we're having, because I'm really giddy, you know, because my situation was very similar, coming from the state of Alaska. Like, I was a hairdresser, and it's so funny, I was supposed to transition from one JCPenney salon to the next JCPenney salon. I had a conversation with the boss, and she's like, sure, come on down when you come. And I was like, okay. So I packed up my three children and my minivan, and I moved to Washington State. And I was only 23, and I was like, yes, a new beginning, you know. So I got there. That woman acted like she had never heard of me before in her life.
Oh, and my goodness.
Yeah, it was so crazy. So I was like, okay, what am I going to do now? At that time, the welfare to work program had started. And so, like, I didn't have to do anything, you know, because my son was young. So I was, like, home. And people saw me taking my daughter to school and my son to school. And they just started asking me to watch their children, like, out of the blue. And I was in an apartment complex, third floor. Before you knew it, I had 8 children in an apartment complex, like carrying twins on both arms with those heavy car seats, and my son crawling up the stairs because he was 18. I mean, it was crazy. So I said, you know, I need to find out what it's like to actually get licensed myself. So the licensing office just happened to be across the street. Found out I was doing something illegal. I was like, oh Lord, this is illegal, you know. So then at the time I actually was receiving Section 8, so I was able to roll that voucher into a house, and bam, that's when it started.
Wow.
I mean, we have some amazing stories, but I mean, I definitely don't want to, you know, these people hear me talk about me every week. We want to make sure we stay on task and talk about you. But I'm so excited, you know, because I still watch the show on YouTube.
Thank you so much.
Yes, Brother Robert, are you there?
Yes, I am. Man.
Okay, we'll let you go with the next question.
All right, so Dr. Tillman, it's a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, so can you tell us about the books that you have written and how the people can purchase them?
Oh, wow. Okay, so the first book was written basically out of desperation, because when I started in the home, you know, inside the apartment, I kept looking. I was like, okay, God, so you showed me the vision, you showed me the end, how am I going to get there? And so, you know, I went researching, trying to find books on how to start a child care center, the whole nine. Couldn't find anything. So I've just always been that child, you know, when you can't find something, then you create it, right? So I wrote the first book, and it was called Stepping Out on Faith, because that's basically what I did. Stepped Out on Faith, How to Open a Quality Child Care Center. So the book starts out with the 7 child care providers, and then it takes them through, you know, how to start it, the licensing process, all of that, how to set up an environment, how to develop a curriculum and a policy handbook. So it goes through all of that. But that book, all of my books can be purchased on my website, which is www.deborahltillman.com or Amazon. And then the second book came about really by accident. I shouldn't say anything, it's by accident. It's always God-inspired. But after getting the show, America's Super Nanny, which is another whole story, what happened was I used to go into the houses, and parents used to be like, fix my child. Just fix my child. They're just horrible. You know, fix my children. And so I went in thinking, okay, wow, this is going to be, like, traumatic. These children are just off out of control. So when I got into the home, literally I observed them for a whole day and found out that it really wasn't the children. It was really the parents.
Mm-hmm.
And so after coming to that realization, I said, you know what, I really need to write a parenting book, because a lot of our parents are just kind of, you know, we work hard. You know, a lot of them are overstressed, overwork, overloaded, overtired. And, you know, the children are getting the brunt of it. And so I say, you know, you can't pour from an empty cup. We really got to learn how to fill ourselves up so that we can be the best people that we can be in order to plant the seeds of greatness in our children. And so that's why I wrote the second book, Parenting on Purpose, because everything is intentional. Everything we do as a parent should be intentional. Every moment is a teachable moment if we are present in the moment. Mm-hmm. But both books can be purchased on my website.
Wow, that is just excellent. And well, you know, before I forget, I mean, I just have to do this because, mm-hmm. you know, I'm the infopreneur. But, you know, my child care rearing started again in Washington. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's an organization called Child Care Resources. And, mm-hmm. you know, of course, now you know about Child Care Aware. But Child Care Resources is an organization in Seattle. And mm-hmm. I mean, I think that you should reach out to them to be a speaker at one of their luncheons. I mean, that would be excellent. I mean, my goodness.
But
I had to say that before I forgot it. Yes. Because I mean, I think that everybody needs your information. Your parenting curriculum should definitely go out more because I volunteered at a couple of places.
Mm-hmm.
I've been a CASA. You know what a CASA is, a guardian ad litem.
Right. Right.
Okay, so I've seen the curriculum that has gone forth in a couple of places, and it just kind of seems very substandard. I'm not calling the authors substandard, but just the presenters or the teachers seem very unenthused about the curriculum. So how can the parents learn from a teacher that's unenthused? I mean, it's just like the children.
Exactly.
From a teacher that's unenthused. You know, we have to put our best foot forward, included in curriculum, when we're trying to teach.
That's right.
Yeah.
Totally agree.
Yes.
Totally agree. Yeah, there's so many curriculums, though, to even... I know you work in early childhood education before, so you know how many are out there. So we've looked at Montessori over the years. We've looked at Creative Curriculum, High Scope, and they all... Becca, but they all have certain pieces that I like. Mm-hmm. But a lot of them were missing what I needed. So again, mm-hmm. you know, being that entrepreneur person, you know, I just said, you know what, I'm done. I'm going to create my own curriculum. And so mm-hmm. I did. I created the Guiding Light curriculum. So it mm-hmm. has a lot of the, you know, spiritual, you know, a lot of spirituality into it, but it's not religious. It's basically, you know, showing children that they are fearfully and wonderfully made, really building up that self-esteem when they're young.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing my dad did for me, and I really believe that 0 to 5, if we can do nothing else, put the 5 fingerprints on our children. Mm-hmm. And those 5 fingerprints are things like, you know, you're capable, letting a child know that they're capable of doing something. There's so many houses I go into where the parents are like, you know, you can't do that. You can't do it. What are you talking about? They can't do it. Mm-hmm. They can always try. Even in my school at Happy Home, they're not allowed to say can't.
Right.
I tell them, take the T out of can't, and you can always try. Don't tell me you can't. So that word is like a bad word at our school. But the five fingerprints are that you are loved, you are accepted, you are valued, you are forgiven, and you're capable. If we can put those five fingerprints on our children from 0 to 5, they're, you know, they got a good head start in life.
Wow. Well, it's better doing it at that tender age than trying to do it later on as an adult, don't you think?
Yeah, you know, easier to raise, you know, healthy children than to repair broken adults. Frederick Douglass said that, so hey.
Yes, well, he was so right. Well, what I have, let's see, some obstacles you have faced. Okay, so let's see. We will go to, go ahead, Robert.
Oh, you said you can go to, go ahead.
No, did you have a question? Because I definitely don't want to leave you out, because you should have 1,000,005 questions by now.
Right. You already know. So I'm still sticking to the script, though, but because I think he was about to read the question about the obstacles, but there's one that asked, who would you say has been your mentor or mentors on your journey towards success?
Yes.
Wow. Mentors. There have been so many. Well, the first one is my mom. I would have to say the first one was my mom, just watching life, you know, growing up with a mother and father. For the first 12 years of my life, I was a daddy's girl. We came home on my 12th birthday and my father was gone. Like, where's daddy? And my mom was like, he's gone. And so that was pretty devastating for me. But one thing I did watch my mother do was, we kind of came from a middle class background and living in probably about 5-bedroom house, you know, the dog, the whole nine for the first 12 years of my life. And then when my father left, we had to move to a 2-bedroom apartment, had to lose the dog, you know, so it was just going from, as a child, extreme. Yeah, my mother went on welfare. She was a stay-at-home mom, so she had to go back to school. My mom worked 3 jobs, went to school at night. Absolutely ridiculous, the kinds of, like, going from, you know, that income to nothing. And I just watched her. I watched her tenacity. I watched her perseverance. I watched her, you know, faith in God. And it just seemed like, you know, prayer was a big thing in our house. And whenever we were in so-called lack, which, you know, you would think that I would know as a child that we were in lack, but I never felt the lack, because it was always love. And so that's what I got from my mother, that sense of perseverance. So, you know, even going through the trials and tribulations of opening the school, which we haven't talked about yet, and those obstacles, I was always moving forward because I watched my mother do it. I mean, she led by example. She was a great role model and a mentor for me. And then I would say, for compassion and the heart and the spirit of just loving people and reaching out to people and helping families and going beyond the call of duty, even that we do at our school, I would say I got that spirit from my grandmother. You know, she was just really that person that just was like the grandma of everybody. She was the village. I mean, she helped everybody. And I grew up seeing that. And so she was another one of my wonderful mentors. And then starting the school, I would have to say Marva Collins. I don't know if you remember her, but she was.
Goodness.
Remember Marva Collins? Yeah.
No, listen. Robert and I just watched that story like 3 weeks ago, and we were both in tears watching that movie. Yes.
Oh my gosh! So I got the opportunity. I absolutely loved her. So I did the same thing you did. I watched her story. And what I loved about her was the courage. You know, she got sick and tired of being sick and tired of the Chicago City Public Schools, and she started her own school. So I got the opportunity to work with, she has a daughter and a son. I actually went to Chicago and studied the curriculum when I first started the school. So a lot of our proverbs, the children recite proverbs. They recite just all kinds of beautiful quotes. They have I am statements in the morning. So, for example, if a child is impatient and they're always like, I want it now, at 3 years old, then their I am statement would be, I am patient, you know, and they say it, you know, they have a happy home motto. Like, we really lift up our children. They meditate in the morning. And so we do a lot of unique, eclectic things to really sow the seeds of success into our children and really build them up.
That is wonderful. I mean, I am just like, I knew I was going to be blown away. I knew it, and I tried to stay with this script. But I mean, it's just impossible because, like, I mean, we go to Chicago every week, and I was looking for the school. I'm like, okay, I wonder if they'll train me. I wonder if I... Oh, my gosh. Because, you know, when you love children, you just cannot get out of that whole mode of, you know, just wanting to be greater and wanting to be better. And after we watched that story on TV, Robert was like, that is you. And I'm like,
amen.
Dr. Tillman, when I say, when she's saying that very lightly, I'm telling you, she is the child whisperer.
Oh, I love that. Oh,
no, Dr. Tillman, we can go into a store and every from a baby to I don't care how they glue their eyes on this woman, they communicate.
Look at that.
I'm telling you, it blows me away.
Wow.
And people say, how old are you, four? And she be every time.
And she knows.
She knows. It just blows. I was like, how you know? I mean, it's just, she has a gift. And some, you know, we all have gifts. And for me, it's exciting to actually witness that in her. Because, I came home one day, and she had my son in the kitchen just doing something with herbs, writing his name in the herbs. And
it
he was
right.
content with that. And I was like, nah, I wouldn't have never thought to do nothing like that.
Wow. So,
when I say child,
that's amazing.
She can work with some children, and I just, for me personally, with her, there is nothing in the world that she needs to be doing other than be with the children, because she just does it with such
look
ease.
At that.
It's crazy. So no,
wow.
I
well, that's her calling. That is her calling.
I was excited for her when you called and the show was put together. I was excited because I said, oh, this is going to be good for her. I mean, I know she was excited. You should have heard her.
Oh, I was in Seattle when your assistant called me. I was at the Goodwill. I was in the middle of the floor. I said, ah! I screamed. And people are like, what happened? And so I'm just talking to Robert on speakerphone. I'm like, I didn't even realize. I'm like, okay, because I talked to a lot of people about being on the show. And then I said, Dr. Tillman. So I went and I looked it up and I said, oh my goodness, it's a super nanny. And so I just
so funny. It was so funny.
I couldn't breathe. I was like, oh my goodness. Oh. Yes, thank you for calling me. I was overwhelmed, and I said I was not going to be starstruck on this show. But I mean,
no,
it's not starstruck.
No, no,
it's
no.
The work that you do is so important because our children are just in lack right now, and we see it all day, every day. And it's because, like you said, it's not the children, it's the parents, you know, and the parents are empty, you know, they're going without, and so they don't have anything to give to the children. Parents are going without love, broken relationships, and all those different things that are just so horrible for a child growing up. Like you mentioned, you know, everything was wonderful until, bam, your dad left. Then you were just in a whole different situation. Well, imagine these situations changing for these children 4 and 5 times a year, you know?
Exactly.
I mean, it's just totally devastating, especially, you know, in our community, there's just so much going on and so much not going on. And, you know, I moved here from, I'll just call it La La Land, Washington State. Because life is totally different, and I'm totally a boots on the ground person, and I'm like, man, I'm just needed here. And I found out that you don't have to be anybody to even have a school, and it's like, wow, okay, so the standard is low, so that means you get to set it. That means you get to be greater than whatever it is that they're saying, you know, whatever. You know, I'm just kind of putting some things together right now. And I think the first step is I just want to be there for our family members. I want to educate them. You know, I'm not necessarily interested in the public yet, but I do want to. I've connected with an organization that allows me to teach parenting classes, and I would like to integrate your curriculum there. Yes, and
that
it's volunteer.
So good.
It's totally volunteer.
Oh, my gosh. I want to close that.
Yeah, it is excellent. So I'm going to get, you know, your curriculum, and I'm definitely going to make sure that we can put that in place versus this other stuff that they have. It's Yeah. But
it's for parents is what you're saying, right?
Yes, ma'am. It's for parents.
That is so
and
great.
It's for parents that are in jeopardy of losing their children or have already lost their children and trying to gain them back.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So we have the greater parenting system for them.
Oh, okay.
It's a seven-module system. Yes, a GPS.
We're going to
get for parenting.
That.
It comes with workbooks and everything. Yeah.
Oh, we are definitely going to get... I mean, I just want all of it. I just want to... Wherever your store is, I want to come to the store. Forget ordering online. I just want to come there. But, yes. So I'm going to definitely get back on the script
here
for a second.
Thank you for what you're doing. Amen.
Well, no, I mean, I'm just thankful. You know, I'm thankful because I have eyes to see. You know, I've had a clouded situation myself. I haven't had a perfect life, but at the same time, I feel God has blessed me to have the energy and the mindset to want to love children because that's just what it is.
Right.
I just love them. I can't wait to be a grandmother because I always say I'm going to be the greatest grandmother that there is because I am preparing myself now for how long that they will have the best.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And what does the best look like for you?
The best looks like for me is me staying relevant in what children need. You know, because we know that people used to do things a certain way, and you know now they do things a different way. And I mean, more particularly, like spanking. You know, I think spanking still needs to be talked about because spanking is, you know, it's still a hot button issue. But I just want to be able to learn to do things in a different way and also teach parents to do things in a different way.
Right.
That's what it looks like to me. I mean, yes. Now, what we're going to do now so we can continue on is we're going to go into our commercial break, our last half hour. You all are listening to Blacks in Business Radio. If you want to chime in, press **. And we will definitely get you in on the conversation. Enough about me, like I said, because I just can't help it. But yes, join us for the last half hour. We're going to go to commercial now.
No, I'm not a writer.
Okay.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
All right. Well, welcome to our last half hour of Blacks in Business Radio. We are talking to Dr. Deborah Tillman. She's also known as America's Super Nanny. She's an author, a mother, a child care provider, a child care center owner, a speaker, a coach. I mean, she just is everything all in one. My goodness, you just, I mean, if you have missed out on this interview, make sure you rewind everything and, you know, get the podcast and listen. And if you're listening, share, because everybody has, you know, parenting issues that they would like to have answered. So, I mean, this is going to definitely help you. Now, Robert, I'm going to let you go ahead and ask some more questions because, you know, it's your turn.
Yes. So, Ms. Tillman, what have you been, what are some of the obstacles that you have been faced with early on in opening up your child care?
Wow. Where do I start? That'll take 3 hours. One of the major ones, which I think a lot of people go through when they're starting out in a business, is the number of no's you get and the number of you can't do that. I mean, literally, after starting in my home, I knew I wanted a school. And so, you know, I remember sitting in front of the licensing specialist because, you know, here in Virginia, and I'm sure most places across the country, you have to, obviously, if you're going to have a center, get it licensed. And I remember her looking at me and saying, you can't do this. Like, I told her my whole plan, my whole vision, laid it out, blueprint, crossed the T's and dotted the I's. And she just looked at me and said, you can't do that. She said, I had three centers and none of them were successful. So you can't do that. And your degree is in accounting. It's not in education. And so, you know, I don't know if you've ever had this experience where somebody's just talking to you and it's like whang, whang, whang. Like you hear, you know their mouth is talking.
But just,
right.
At one point, I just literally tuned her out.
Yes.
And I kept thinking, I think I can. I think, you know, that little, the book, The Little Engine That Could?
Yes. Yes.
I think I can. I think I can. So as she's talking, I'm making my mindset go to, I think I can, I think I can. But I'm not saying anything, right? So I don't hear anything she says because I already know everything is negative that's coming out of her mouth.
Right.
And literally, that lady had no clue that she gave me such motivation after
right.
leaving there. Oh, my gosh. That I was like, you know what? I'm not only going to do this, you're actually going to be the licensing specialist for all three of my schools. So literally, I called up and said, oh, opening another one. I want her to be the licensing specialist. So, you know, the Lord will lay a table before you in the presence of your enemies. And
yes.
this is 24 years later, and she still is like, at this point, she's just like, I'm so sorry. I think about a year ago, she came to me and apologized and said, I should have never really discouraged you. I said, you actually didn't. You actually motivated me.
Well, not only will he lay the table out, he'll lay the table out and let them watch you eat.
Yes, he will. Amen. Amen. You preach. You preach. But yeah, it was all of that. It was the no's. It was the you can't, you know, do that. And again, you know, you just have to know within yourself, you know, and be confident within yourself that, you know, no matter what happens, I can get through this. And again, it goes back to my mom watching her having to raise three girls, go on welfare, do all of that, and then still make it. And so I always tell parents, boy, you do not know the influence that you have on a child as a parent. You know, I call it, I tell every parent, even when I'm teaching, I say, you know, parenting acronym is to be in position, the P, be in position to adequately raise, educate, nurture, and train your child. That's what parents mean. To be able to do that. And if we could just do that effectively, then our children will just really have a better chance at reaching their divine destiny.
Okay.
Absolutely. Now, why don't you tell them while you're at it, while you're making acronyms, well, let's talk about discipline. You know, because I stood out to me about discipline. You said discipline is the root word of what?
Yeah, disciple.
Uh-huh.
The root word is disciple, which means to teach. Yeah, it means to teach. And so if you're not teaching anything, then there's no sense in you doing it. And so that's what, you know, that's always my argument to parents who, like, hit their children in the mouth and, you know, smack them upside the head, because I see so many things. Or you can take out the belt or go get the, you know, back in the day, my mother used to be like, go get the switch. You know, and so what is that teaching, really? You know, to fear the belt? And what happens when the belt goes away? What happens when I get too old for you to spank me? Then what? So, I mean, it takes a lot more time to teach a child, but it's better in the long run. So what we do, even at our school, you know, anywhere between 18 months, probably younger than that, 16 to 18 months, they start getting into their own developmentally, you know, getting into their own personalities. You'll start seeing little things, you know, if they don't want peas, they'll start pushing them off the high chair, you know, swiping back at you. And what is the first thing out of a parent's mouth? No, stop. Don't do that. And I tell my parents, stop telling a child what not to do. Tell them what to do. So at my school, say, for example, a child swipes at you at like 18 months. We say, I take their hand and I say, gentle touches. And then I start clapping and smiling. Why? Because they're into impulses. They're into, you know, you can walk into a room and a child will cry if somebody has a bad spirit. They're just very connected like that, right? That's why children gravitate towards you, because they know in your heart is something about the spirit. They're connected to your spirit, so they gravitate to you. Somebody who's mean that comes to them, they could be smiling, and a child will start crying. So I always take their hand, and I'm like, gentle touches, and then I start clapping and smiling. And then I hit not them, but my own hand as if they hit me, and I say, don't like it, and I shake my head like a mean face, like, don't like it, and then I do the gentle touches again and start clapping again. It takes a lot more time, but they understand, they get it. So that's why I tell parents to do. Anytime there's an issue, tell them what to do. Show them. It's like show and tell. Show them what to do as opposed to what not to do.
Okay, yes. So how do you tell them to go to bed, go to sleep? And then
you're
5 minutes later, right. And you 5 minutes later, you hear them talking, and just like I just had to do a minute ago, I said, now, didn't I just tell y'all to go to bed, and I don't want to hear any talking? So how do I show
how them old them? Are they? How old are they?
6 and 3, 4.
Three. Okay.
Three.
So they're
three.
Okay. Three and six.
Yeah.
Okay. So just like life, right? Every rule, because they have to know the rule, right? So you do the three B's, I'm sure, like bath, brush their teeth, one book, sweet dreams. Okay. So that's my little three B's to get into bed. So once they do that, that is the wind down time. Okay. The three B's, right? Bath, brush teeth, one book, and sweet dreams. The three B's. Once you do that, and you already know the house rules. I'm sure you have some house rules somewhere, right? That say use always positive. Okay, we don't do naughty and all that stuff. We say positive things like use your listening ears, speak kind words, use gentle touches, okay?
That's right.
Walking feet, that kind of thing. Okay, so they already know the rules. So the listening ears would kick in at bedtime when you say, okay, we've done the three B's. It's time to go to sleep. Good night. I love you. You pray. All of that. They're in the bed. Now they get out of the bed. Every choice that you make has a consequence. You're very smart, so I'm not going to give you more than one warning. I don't give the children at my school more than one warning. If they get out the bed, you show them, you have the chart, you show them the listening ears. I need you to use your listening ears and go back to bed. Now, they start talking again, then there's a consequence. You need to put a consequence in place. You can't keep saying, go back to bed, go back to bed. You'll be talking till you're like blue in the face.
Right.
It's all just like life, right? You break a rule, there is a consequence. So I don't know what they like, but I love the six-year-olds because they like something. They like either some computer time, some iPad, like something. They like something. So that gets taken away if you're not, that is one of the consequences. That would be one of the, or the calm down corner for your younger ones, right? Because they don't like standing and being bored. Like, you know, then they start falling out. But you got to have a consequence. Every rule has a consequence when they break it, okay? Because you don't need to talk more than once. Our children are very smart. And you don't want to start something that you're not going to continue. So because you as a parent don't want to have to say 5 and 6 times, get back in the bed. I told you to get back in the bed. I want some water. I'm tired. You know, I'm tired. They say I'm tired, but then they don't go back to bed. They start talking. Or I want the light on. It's always a excuse after excuse after excuse. So in order to just get rid of all of that, it's the one warning and the consequence, and then that's it.
You know, he's working as a grandparent. How crucial is the role of a grandparent when the parent works a whole lot and the grandparent is stepping in? Which, I mean, I'm very proud of Robert. He has done that. He saw that his grandson was having an issue. He found out that his grandchildren were at a daycare until 9 o'clock at night. And so he went and he picked them up from school and he takes them home and he takes
That's
care
so
of
sweet.
Them until the mom gets off. Yes.
That's so sweet. That is awesome. But even grandparents, you know, don't let them run over you. I know that's a whole nother role because, you know, your grandparents are these really nice. But again, you don't want to be the kind of grandparent that lets the children run over you, you know, because bottom line is respect is number one.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to train them up, right? Teach, talk, and train from 0 to 5. Teach, talk, and train. Listen, learn, and love from 5 up. So teach, talk, and train. So we're training them to have some respect when you say go to bed, go to bed.
Right.
Okay, so let's move on to some more. I mean, I got a whole list of questions that people were asking, but we talked about curriculum. Now, if let's say I'm a child care provider and I want to have you train me, or is there a curriculum that I can purchase to train my staff? Is there anything like that? Do you offer mentoring?
Both. So we have the Guiding Light curriculum, and that is it's actually getting licensed now. So it'll be launched in March on my website. And then the mentoring classes, because I'm so busy and we're kind of developing a whole lot of stuff right now for this year, I did one last year, and I'll do another mastermind mentoring class. But I I accept limited number of participants. And so that, because I like to spend time with people, I don't like to just put stuff out there and then they're not able to ask questions and really go through that with me. So that'll be launched in April. The second one will be launched in April. So they can go on my website and we just take the first 50 people. I don't tell them when it's going to be launched. They just have to keep going to the website. And then the first 50, I take.
Wow. Okay. Well, that definitely sounds like something I'm interested in. okay. Wonderful. So... Let's see, what would you say to a child care provider that is suffering from burnout? Now, I know a lot of friends that they are suffering from burnout, and they have not trained themselves in anything else. But if they're suffering from burnout, do you think that they should close their business?
Oh, wow. I am not the one, you know, to say close your business unless your why isn't big enough. So because your why, you talking about you, your why was big enough. That's why I don't think you would ever suffer from burnout. And then my why is big enough. Why? Because I never want another parent to go through what I went through. So even though we get tired, even though we get overwhelmed and sometimes stressed, we would never walk away from our calling. And so it just depends on if it's their calling or not. Sometimes people are in positions that it's not their purpose. You know what I mean? And so for them, yes, burnout means I'm just done with this, you know. So I would have to get to the root of the problem and find out, okay, is it that they're just being they're working in their business as opposed to working on their business? I don't know if you've ever read the book The E-Myth, but The E-Myth is a really good book to read. I have my when I train entrepreneurs, I have them, we take some things from The E-Myth. But to read The E-Myth, you know, if you're working in your business, if you're doing everything, if you're an HR person, if you're the finance person, if you're, you know, bringing parents in, if you're doing all the tours, then you're going to get burned out. You're going to be tired.
Yes, yes.
And that's not your job. You know, so you gotta stay in your lane. Like, and you have to know what your lane is. And so I would just probably peel back the onion, get to the root of the issue, find out why they are where they are, meet them where they are, and then try to get them out of the rut. But as far as me that telling them to close their business, that would have to come from them.
Yes.
And we would see it. We would know that it would be time to close their business because that's not really their calling.
Yes. You know, and I've seen that so many times where people are doing it for the money. And, I mean, itself really quickly. Now, I know for me, in my home child care, when I hired a wonderful assistant, that was just the greatest thing in the world. I mean, this lady was there. I mean, she totally loved the children. She was gentle.
Well, that was
a
blessing.
She was kind. She wasn't rough. I mean, and then she ended up opening her own. And I mean, I just knew it was good.
Awesome. You know,
yeah, that was great. But we have a guest that is listening. Her name's Miss Janine Ridgway, and I hope to have her on the show pretty soon. But she has a question about her daughter. She says, my daughter is almost 12, and socializing seems to be her sole priority already. It's all about my friend, this, that, and other. How do I get her to realize her role in the household and her job, which is school, at the stage of life, and strike a good balance? Oh, hold on. My phone decided to... Hold on. Strike a good balance. Let's see. Strike a good balance for her. I see the little attitude building up already. Whenever it comes to her responsibilities, she literally wants to play all day and every day.
She wants to play?
Yeah, she just
basically
wants
to play all day and every day.
Yeah, play all day, every day.
Okay. Well, the rules don't change. I mean, again, there need to be rules in place. She's 12, so, you know, that's an interesting age, the preteen. Starting to get the attitudes and the rolling of the eyes, and I want what I want, and if I don't get it, then I'm going to have an attitude. Okay, that's all fine and dandy, but not in this house, okay? So mommy's going to have to – the big thing for me is, you know, pick your battles, communicate, okay? But in order to communicate, you got to connect. And I think with the influx of social media and technology and our children, you know, it could be great. Technology is great, but it also has a downfall, especially when, you know, they get on social media and then they have friends and then they're going back and forth. And so basically there just need to be some rules in place, you know, that the household is the responsibility and whatever chores she has or whatever she's supposed to do needs to be done before all the other stuff gets done. And if that doesn't happen, then again, you know, we've got to start taking away some things. But I think for young people, when she talks about friends, what I do is, and, you know, because we as parents like to put down the law, like we like to lay down the law. This is what you need to be doing, da 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 da. And it kind of goes in one ear of a 12-year-old and out of the other. Mm-hmm. And so I think when we have these conversations where we talk to them about, okay, you have all these friends, tell me why they're your friends. Tell me what kind of character traits, what kind of values do they have? Like when you just have a normal conversation with them and just to hear them out, to see how they think. Mm-hmm. Because I think a lot of times we like to make our children into little robots and just say, this is how you need to be. This is what you need to be doing. These aren't you, you know, this is what, and it's just too much.
Mm-hmm.
Communication and connection and building up the relationship is most important at 12, 13, and 14, because that's when the outside world has more influence than the inside.
Wow. Well, Janine, there's your answer. And if you need to ask more questions, feel free to dial ** since you're here. But Robert, why don't you go ahead and pick another question out of our long list that we didn't even get to from the parent questions, so that, you know, parents can know that we still love them. Pick a question out of here.
Well, I got a question. I think this is a great question. How can a parent handle severe behavioral issues at school?
Wow, at school. Severe. Wow, that means that they've had something before it got severe. Okay.
They had a purple day.
Oh, yeah. I think the best thing, and the only example I can give, well, I have a lot of examples, but one I can give you was when my child obviously left my preschool and then he went to kindergarten, and one of the teachers, you know, just having problems, you know. It really goes back to, you know, being the kind of parent that is involved in your child's education, and really, as soon as there's an issue, going to the school, meeting the people. Don't just get on the phone. Don't just listen to the messages. Don't just, you know, get the text messages or the emails and then go back and forth like that. Like, show up. Go to the school. Be present. And then try to, hopefully it's a good school and good administration that you can actually work with the school together on how to solve problems. My biggest thing with dealing with elementary schools, because we follow our kids. So say, for example, I had a child that graduated in 1997 or 2008. We actually go to the high school if they're having problems in the high school. And the best thing I could say is if you bring everybody together, the administrator, the guidance counselor, the teachers, the child, the parents, and you have a meeting and you really find out, okay, what's going on? So sometimes, most of the time, it's behavior issue. Oh, she's talking. Oh, she's disrespectful. Oh, she's this. Oh, she's that. Or he. Well, then, you know, I've not been, I guess, absent from showing up and actually sitting in on a classroom. Now, do parents have that kind of time? Not always, but I would say that you have to do it, because it really is your responsibility to raise your child, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, if there's a problem at the school, only the school. You only know the problem by observing what's happening in the school.
Mm-hmm.
And so you go to school and you sit in on a class. Now, what child will want their parent to sit in a class, particularly if you're older, particularly if you're in middle school and high school? Like, you don't want to see your mother and father there, right? But you need to go. And you need to let them know and make it clear that, you know, this is what is expected inside and outside of the school. And if it's a child's fault, then obviously you deal with the child, because learning doesn't happen outside of the school. It happens in the home. And if it's the teacher or the administration, then obviously you as a parent would deal with that issue. But the only way to know is to go to the school, to be present, and to speak up. You know, be the advocate for your child. Those issues really happen a lot where I have to show up with children with special needs. It's always, you know, the parent who doesn't, you know their rights, or a parent who feels like, oh, I can't, you know, kind of buck up against the system because then they're going to take it out on my child. It's always some issue like that. And I always have to let them know, listen, you are your child's first advocate. You are your child's teacher.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the end of the day, they spend a lot of time at school, but they spend most of their time really at home.
And see, what I realize is the parent doesn't realize, because most of the time the child has an IEP. Your child has an IEP? Oh, no, you have the golden path to righteousness right now.
Yeah.
It's like, let's call a meeting whenever we need one. This child needs this. We're going to make sure this child gets it. If they do not follow that, that is federal. We're going to make sure that these teachers and this principal is accountable. You're going to see me here every week, every day if I need to be here. Yes.
But imagine a lot of parents. Look, I got parents who don't show up for preschool concerts, okay? So, and that's not a lot of them, but it, there have been some that are just, you know, so busy, like the President of the United States, you know, like, I'm just so busy I can't show up for my child's, you know, poetry night reading. So, you know, that, again, it goes back to the parents and really taking, being accountable, like you said, being responsible and being in position to really, like I said, adequately raise, educate, nurture, and train. Because at the end of the day, it's your child.
That's right. That's right. It is your child. And you're going to have to answer to how that worked out that way when you know that you didn't provide your best to that child. And see, that's the biggest, that's the biggest, whoa, I don't even know how to explain it. It's just something extra. Now, let's see. We are going to... Yeah, none of these are short. So what we're going to do is we're going to just thank you, Dr. Tillman, for coming on our program. We are so looking forward to
so very welcome
connected with you. I mean, if you have something coming out you need a commercial for, we can definitely run it on this network. Because
thank you so much.
If you need a podcast, we have one for very inexpensive on this network also. I believe it's like $10 of something. Scotty can tell us. Yeah, it's very inexpensive. Scotty can let us know, but I'll send the information over to your assistant. And if you would like to run parenting advice through this network, it's very much so needed, and we would love to have you aboard. But
thank you so much.
Thank you for coming on. Robert, do you have any last words for Dr.
Thank
Tillman?
You for having me.
I just thank you for reaching out to get back in touch with us and blessing us presence on our show. Really, I hope that everybody that was listening tonight and those that listen to this podcast in the future, you get all the jewels that I just got. And thank you so much, sister, for coming.
Thank
on.
You we so much for having me. I appreciate
and Dr.
you
Tillman,
both.
And Dr. Tillman, tell them how they can get you know, get a hold of your content or reach out to you before you go.
Sure, it's my website www.deborahltillman.com. And then if they could just go to Facebook, because I'm doing prayers for our children. So the first prayer in February was prayer for healing, and in March it'll be a prayer for our children's purpose in life. So just tune in and listen to the prayers.
Okay, so the Facebook page is what?
Deborah L. Tillman.
Oh, Deborah L. Tillman. Okay, you guys go to Deborah L. Tillman. You know you love Facebook, so get on there and get yourself some prayer for you and your children, so we can make the healing happen, because we definitely need it, so we can grow and raise wonderful entrepreneurs and people that are looking forward to the future. But Dr. Tillman, thank you so much again. Join
thank
us again
so
anytime
much.
And we look forward to talking to you again, okay?
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Good night. All right. That was Dr. Deborah Tillman, America's Super Nanny. I mean, I could just go to sleep now.
Right.
I was so nervous all day, and this is so crazy because I was rehearsing this. Okay, you're not going to act starstruck. You're not going to be, you know, acting like that. You're not going to get giddy. You're going to remain in control. No. It all went out the window because I love watching her in action. I mean, if anybody listening has watched her show, you know what I mean. She is just so amazing, not just how she handles children, but how she handles parents. You know, she gives them that compassion, but she also gives them that tough love. Where the parent is at fault, she definitely makes sure that she lets them know that. And ultimately, parents are at fault. Because how did your child get like this? Why are they acting out? Why are they whatever it is that they're doing? But Dr. Deborah, wonderful entrepreneur. Definitely reach out to her, get her information, join her on Facebook for prayer, so that you can, you know, seek healing for your children. I mean, I'm definitely going to do it. But yes, if you have a child care and you need her curriculum, or you have a child care, you need her inspiration or handbooks or whatever else she may offer. I also saw like some flashcards that she had too, but if you go on her website, you'll see everything that she has available. But yeah, we're going to be done here. Robert, you have any last words?
Yes, yeah, please keep supporting Black Talk Radio Network, and also please keep tuning in to listen to BIB Blacks in Business Radio. If you want to reach out to me personally, you can go to weareblacksinbusiness@gmail.com and email us. We do a lot of things, so again, we appreciate you tuning in, and stay strong and stay healthy.
Yes, Blacks in Business Radio every Thursday at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. We appreciate you all, and we'll talk to you again next week. Good night.